G'day and welcome back to another episode of the Ideas Digest podcast, where we, Matt and I, embark on a new idea adventure each week, exploring the new and challenging ideas, breaking some of our own biases, Matt. My name's Conrad.
And it's Matt.
If you're a new friend of the show, welcome. Obviously, you're very welcome in this space. Regular friends of the show, welcome back. And super friends of the show, Matt.
We love you.
A super welcome.
There's shrines of every single one of you on our walls.
There is. We water your little bonsai tree every time. And these are the super friends that went to ideasdigest.org, signed up to support the show to help us keep doing what we're doing.
Seriously, guys, every one of you that... contributes in the smallest way, either through a 5-star review, not a 1-star, but we are interested in the 1-stars.
Well, I have gotten one.
Yeah, they're good.
We got one.
5-star review on iTunes or whatever podcast platform you use, or going to ideasdigest.org really helps make this show possible. And we have a huge vision of how this could help more people. So
now, Matt, speaking of reviews, I found a 5-star one just lying on my table there. No, this one just drifted to the top.
I was scrolling through my phone and I just saw this 5-star review.
Listen, I'll just read some of it.
I'm accidentally reading it out right now.
I'll just read some of it. This is from Don't Think Twice. Okay. So Don't Think Twice says, Conrad slays this difficult and mind-opening genre of the boundary-breaking interviewing.
Nice.
I mean, it feels like I wrote this myself. He invites guests of many different viewpoints. That's us. And you, friends of the show, you're part of this.
Yeah.
Religious, spiritual, and others, and tries to get to the bottom of their beliefs, exposing their humanity. I mean, I could keep going, but you get the idea. Conrad slays. Matt's new to the show. He might need a few reviews to be like, Matt also slays.
The Conrad and the other guy. That's who I'll be.
That's cool. I will read that review if it pops through. Yeah. So iTunes, what is 2001? Apple Podcasts.
Yeah, right.
Review on Apple Podcasts. Anyway. Bit of an update, upcoming ideas, Matt. Mm-hmm. What are you working on in the works?
I'm still working through my Ancient Aliens episode, which is going to be fun.
Ancient Aliens. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Okay. I've got one. I don't know if you'll like it or not. Manifesting.
Yeah.
So I have a friend who only wears white clothing.
Mm.
Do you know why?
Maybe it's a frequency thing of manifestation.
You're very close. They looked at a study and they saw that wealthy people wore more white.
Wow.
And therefore... she threw out all her black clothing.
That's why. This is why, like, Byron Bay just wears white linen.
And then they don't. Well, there's some rich people in Byron Bay too. Okay, so I'm going to look into.
I'm not talking about the dirty hippies.
Yeah, they need to wear more white. So correlation, causation. I'm not sure. I'm ready to look into it. But Matt, you've got something for me. You've been working on it a few weeks. I'm going to fly blind here. I'm not really sure where you're going to bring me.
I've given you some hints through the week.
Listen, you start where you want to start and I'm going to buckle in. Friends of the show, we're going to buckle in for the ride.
I'm right and you're wrong.
Listen up. Once you start labeling people,
categorizing of humans and ideas,
you have desensitized yourself to the humanity of that other human being,
to who they really are.
And in the marketplace of ideas,
these things are complicated, man.
We all need to engage with a variety of viewpoints.
A genuine multicultural connection with another.
I mean, sometimes you don't need to agree or disagree. You just need to sit with it and digest.
If heaven were real, I think the way to get there is following your instincts, your intuition, and doing what you have set for yourself.
There's nothing that we can do to earn our way into heaven, and that's a good thing.
100% heaven is real. We get there by believing in Jesus that he died for our sins.
The only way that we can get to heaven is through a personal relationship with Jesus Christ.
So I think that it's a matter of, will we be comfortable in God's presence and will we have lived in a way that we know we belong there? Because I think if we haven't, we won't even want to be there in the first place.
So guys, this... high trigger warning for many of you, maybe if you're a Christian, but hold on because
you're reading the warning label on the back.
You're like
trigger warning Christians.
This is potentially, and this came from the person I spoke to, a human about to be introduced to, the flat earth of Christianity.
As in flat earth is...
No, not about flat earth, but this is like the flat earth version of like, wait a second, you know how like, what if the world is flat?
We're all wrong.
Yeah, we're all wrong.
All Christians are wrong.
Many Christians are wrong.
I'm going with
We've
all.
We've missed it.
I'm amping that up to 10.
No, it's good. Okay. So story goes. So I was out, we're living in Bali, loving life at Bali, trying to be Ideas Digest influencers out here. Yeah. Not really. We do other stuff. And
but mostly influence people.
So I was out there. We were scuba diving. Amazing scuba diving mm-hmm. with manta rays and whatever. So we're going for lunch. And just sitting there at lunch, just like really buzzed after the dive. Just yeah, saw yeah. all these things.
Saw some fish.
And then I get this random call from this guy called Chris, one of my old friends. Mm-hmm. And where do you we know have Chris? A lot of history. A where lot do you of know history. Chris from? No, where do you... I'll get into that. Okay. So anyway, he calls up. He's like, mate, I saw, like, he's a friend of the show. So, hey to Chris. Thank you so much for inspiring all this content we're about to go through.
Also, all friends of the show, if you're in, if you find an interesting idea, send it in.
Call us.
Give us a call. My Instagram's always open.
Yeah, yeah. Call us. Anyway, so he's just like, man, I listened to your episode. So it was an old episode I did of my story of, you know, and if you don't know what that is, that was me being yeah. a... fundamentalist Christian to charismatic pastor, mega Apple evangelist. Pastor. It wasn't mega church.
Yeah, it was pretty mega.
And then out of that into atheism and agnosticism. So that was just my journey and how he really liked to give me some feedback. And so then you asked before, who's Chris? And so me and Chris go way back. Okay. So way back in the day, so in the part of my story, if you go back and listen to that old episode, you would have known that I had a really fundamentalist up, like, you know, start to the whole journey.
I remember this.
So in this start of the journey, Conrad, it was, you know, let's just wind back the clock to 2005 where Chris and I, we are missionaries in Africa.
Which part of Africa?
Mozambique. Okay. And so we had, like, this is where we first really got to spend time together.
Pause. Yeah. Your mission is to convert people to Christianity,
Adventism specifically. Yeah. Okay. So we had stories we could tell there.
You're preaching, building a shelter.
Yeah, doing humanitarian work, okay. preaching, doing all that sort of stuff. And so we became great friends there. And then we almost died together, actually.
Can't gloss over that.
So one time we came, this is after Africa, maybe a year after Africa, we decided to go fishing. And another friend of ours, we went out fishing. And I don't know if you, was at this place called Swansea, New South Wales, Australia.
I know it.
Yeah. And so you'd know there's a little bit of island just off. Right. That and we were going to go fishing for salmon.
Oh, so we're not in Africa at the moment.
No.
I thought you were
one
dying.
Year later.
Right.
And so one of my friends decides he wants to surf some of the big sets coming through, knowing okay. that I'm nice, like petrified in the water.
Yeah.
And so one of these sets come through, and Chris, who I worked at during this whole missionary trip, most chilled surfer guy, would go out just like, you know, goes out massive surf, no fear. Constantly chilled, just yep. like constantly, yep. you know, one of those surf and chill type guys. Mm. Just throw him out there in a big surf, no fear. I see Chris's face change as our boat jacks up. This is one of the coldest Augusts on record. We're all rugged up and we go flying through the air together.
You fly out of the boat.
We fully capsize.
The boat flips. Yeah. It's like a little tinny.
Yeah. And so we, I swam to shore, came up, we stripped off, and then we'll like... Chris almost got hypothermic because he tried to swim down and get the actual like anchor out. And I tried to get an alert because the sun was setting. It was all a bit dodgy.
Right.
But we got rescued by Swansea Coast Guard.
Coast Guard rescue.
Yeah. So me and Chris are sort of bonded for life. So he called me out of the blue and I was just like, Chris, like, I haven't spoken to you in ages.
You're
and,
alive still. Awesome.
Yeah, yeah. And I didn't quite know because me and Chris hadn't really checked in. Okay. You know, one of those... friends where you used to share like quite a intense spiritual or intense part of your life. We hadn't checked in a while. And so I was actually curious as to where he had landed. Cause I know
you're both in Africa together, converting people.
Yeah.
And now years later,
this is years later. We're both married. Matt? Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, who knows?
Who knows?
Changes the moon cycles. and so I'm in one of the cycles. So I'm not sure what part of or was right. at Bali.
Self-discovery.
And he calls through and I'm like, oh yeah, yeah. We haven't caught up in ages. And then he starts leading on with some things that he was sort of like, yo, dude, this is... He quite quickly transitioned into something that's really changed his life. Like, okay. really, really changed his life. Yep. And I'm like, oh, wow. So what is it?
I love it when people come to me like and say, Conrad, you've got to try this. Mm. I love it. Personally, I do it to people. I'm like, Matt, I've got this good burger. Yeah, I was bro, don't force your stuff on me. I love it. So I'm liking this.
And because we're going for user-generated content on the show, I'm like, I'm hearing this. I'm like, wait. We would like, I'm going to tell this to Conrad. We need to tell
him. And he's a friend of the show.
So
love it.
Basically, he has, he's still, I think, slightly in that vein of Adventism.
Okay.
But he's gone into this very controversial area called Universalism.
That's okay. Pause. Mm-hmm. That's a dirty word, my friend.
I know.
And for friends of the show who may not be like, what do you mean universalism? We'll define it in a second. But universalism, that word is a slur thrown by conventional or conservative Christians at more progressive Christians. Friend of the show, Rob Bell, when we had him on.
Big name drop there.
Big name drop. Yeah, Rob Bell, you probably heard of him.
Yeah.
Big dog in the progressive.
We had him on the show.
Look it up, episodes back there. Great chat, by the way. Great friend of the show. Might get him back one day. Who knows? But I threw that slur at him. I said, people saying you're a universalist.
Yeah.
And I'll have to, let me just remember what he said to that cutscene.
Rob Bell, the internet cries this dirty word. They say you're a universalist, the big U word.
What does that word mean?
You define it and then you say yes or no.
That's fascinating. I think I don't actually know what people mean by that word. That seems like a very broad, lazy word that is just applied to
what
somebody.
What do you think they mean?
Well, I've heard some people say what they mean is truth doesn't matter. Or what they mean is nothing matters. Or what they mean, they literally are saying, so in the end, being good or being compassionate or helping people is futile because nothing matters in the end. So it actually presents itself as religious terminology, but it's actually the language of despair. So I would just reject that wholeheartedly. For other people, what the word means is you believe that everybody is loved.
So universalism, friends of the show, what the hell is that and why does this piss Christians off so much?
Well, yeah, it's really interesting because basically it's the TLDR of it is that God will save all people. There's no, if there is a hell, it's temporary. Eventually grace covers it all and everyone will be saved. But the big conspiracy thing is, and this is who Chris actually came up with the title of this episode, the flat earth of Christianity. It's in the sense that most people think it's heretical, but what if I was to tell you that perhaps it was probably, perhaps, just perhaps, at least to the early Christian period, it was a very well accepted thing. And then political things, conspiracy things.
Okay, we go dial the conspiracy, okay.
Conspiracy things happen and then all of a sudden the hell thing just latches on and bang, the early church takes off with it. But there's a few centuries in there where if Rob Bell was alive back then, 100, 200, 300 AD, I guarantee you he would have had an audience, he would have been accepted, and he wouldn't have been cast out as a heretic.
So you're painting a Christian world where the Rob Bells, the progressive Rob Bells, if you know anything about him, he got booted from he was a keynote speaker at all these Christian denominations. He got booted because he was accused of this. He has a way of dancing around it, but you know, he could be categorized as that. So you're saying there's a world in which Rob Bell is the orthodox and all these people who believe in a literal hell, who believe that their doctrine can save them, that they're the only, that their religion is the remnant religion. Can't think of any that think that at the top of my head. Adventism.
Yeah.
I don't want to name names, but I just did.
Yeah.
That this idea is kind of saying this is why, it sounds like this is why Christians are really going to hate this.
Yeah.
Because you're saying that their doctrine not only is wrong, but also doesn't matter because everyone's saved. Is that universalism?
Yeah, exactly. And as you were saying this, and actually I'm going to roll a little clip of, because like I think you need to hear like the amount that has impacted Chris.
This is a good question to ask.
And I think because a lot of people listening would be like, I don't really give a crap.
Who cares?
Like, meh, old book. Like, you know, I've left that behind. Yes. Or you're in that midst of that wrestle and you're like heretical. Your mind won't even go there. So I'm just going to play a little clip of that. I did an interview. And if you're a Plus subscriber, you get to hear
the
whole thing of Chris. But this is just a little snippet of a good half an hour conversation we had.
So for me personally, it was once I had confidence that it was actually biblical, it was like a cloud lifted off my shoulders because I was wrestling with this back and forth for many weeks. And just intensely consuming information, studying my Bible, reading, you know, looking at the history. And there's a lot of history to back this up. And, you know, listening to guys, you know, podcasts, YouTubers, there's a lot of information on this. So, you know, that point in time where I really felt confident in this and it just made so much sense. It's like the light just flicked on, and it just, I just felt free, you know, I just felt free, just an overwhelming sense of relief, you know, because no longer are we, does everyone's salvation depend on us? You know, now God is sovereign and I can trust him and I can rest and I can see the beauty in all of our trials. I can see that it's all redeemable, you know, that God is good. So yeah, for me, I think it just, it actually took me down off a pedestal. You know, I think as Adventists, we have this, I call it like spiritual elitism. You know, we kind of think we have it all sorted. We have it all figured out and too bad for the rest of you guys. You don't get it. You know, you're not on our level. And I think as much as we want to deny that, I think it's very much true, you know, and subconsciously that was true in my mind. You know, I felt like I had to convince everyone of all these beliefs in order for them to you know, be accepted by God or something, which is crazy. And but yeah, it's just, that's the subconscious influence of religion on us. You know, it separates us to the point where we don't see the common people on the street as our brothers, you know. But seeing now that we all have a common destiny, you know, I can see the atheist and I can understand his struggle and I understand why he has doubts. I empathize with him and I still see him as my brother. You know, it feels beautiful to have that connection, you know, and not to judge. It just took away judgment, you know, out of my heart, you know, which I think speaks to the beauty of the doctrine. I think, you know, is really what people find repulsive about religion is the fact that it is a spiritual elitism and that there is judgment and, you know, everyone's watching everyone, you know, to see who's going to step out of line or who's going to transgress the dogma, you know. So just, I feel an immense freedom and you know, I want other people to participate in that too, you know, and just to see that we have a beautiful common destiny and it's one of glory, one we can't even fathom. And we basically get a chance to have a positive impact on the world and to lift each other up, to basically, you know, yeah, to strengthen each other, to be there for each other. You know, the currency of heaven is love. You know, that's what it's all about, love and empathy.
This guy should be a pastor.
Yeah, it's good. Hey, yeah, that's what I'm saying. I was excited when I heard this. Mm-hmm. And obviously, he was, you know, you hear the whole interview, huge impact on his marriage. Friends around him as well that have also gotten into this have had similar impacts. And to be honest, Conrad, obviously, you know, I know my belief systems may change with the moon cycles, but was I willing to go rewind?
Yeah.
Back to Triggerville.
Yeah. Because it's taking you to an interesting place, right? Yeah. So there's this God construct mm-hmm. that you shared in your journey. You kind of went, this isn't working. I'm going to throw it out. And this is where I'm ending up now. And he's kind of coming to you and saying, I suppose you were meant to throw out that God because you had God wrong. Mm. And are you ready to be reintroduced to... So I guess, Matt, as you explore this idea, this is something that would be very interesting. Are you ready to come to Jesus again?
Well, funny you say that because I was on the back of a motorbike recently in Bangkok. So, you know, crazy traffic weaving in and out. And I had to get to this CrossFit class, right? So
got to get there.
You know, from my history, I love cults. And so I go from cult to cult to cult and I watch Mormon TV. I'm into all this sort of weird stuff.
I don't know
if
friends of the show know this, but sorry, I'm glad you're...
Am I oversharing?
No, they need to know this about you, Matt. Like, Matt, there's this cult element that really pulls Matt in.
Yeah, yeah. So if I'm going to exercise, it needs to be in a cultish environment,
and that's
right?
The one.
And that's the one, right? Yeah. So anyway, I needed to get to this class. I was running late. And so I was just like, call this motorbike taxi. Motorbike taxi picks me up from the hotel. And I'm like, okay, yeah, it's going to be pretty tight. But this guy's flogging like really fast. I'm
ripping traffic.
Ripping traffic. And like I ride motorbikes here, or scooters here. And he had like, he hit the whole maneuvering thing down. Like he was hitting at speed going.
Just lane splitting at speed.
Yeah, lane splitting at speed. And I'm like, this is, and I've got no protection. Like, you know, and then we hit 70, 75 going through. I'm like 80.
You got a helmet on?
No.
And so, not that the helmet they would have given you would have done it.
I know. And so there was one point I was so freaking scared. Like I was just flying, the winds, I closed my eyes and I might have said a little prayer.
Dear Jesus.
I said, God help me. Please save me. Like
almost a profanity. A profanity turned into a prayer.
I know. I was like, basically, fuck God.
Help me.
I'll make a deal.
Yeah, yeah.
I was ready to make a deal at that point. If he said, yes, I will protect you, go back to pastoral ministry, I'll be like, we're done.
That would have been the moment.
Yeah, yeah.
God, he must have been snoozing.
Anyway, we all know what happened with those sort of like, you know, sort of like there's no atheists in the trenches sort of.
Yeah, like, you had motif. That moment.
Yeah, I had that moment. Anyway, yeah. I got to CrossFit, forgot about it. But anyway, I did tell my friend later and he laughed his head off and he's just like, yeah, well, that's
well,
you.
Well, it's interesting as we go, is Matt ready to explore another version of God?
Yeah, exactly. It was challenging in that sense. And I really wanted to do, like, because Chris and I are friends, I could see the real impact on his life.
Mm.
And so I guess the bias within me would be like, oh, you know, like, do you really need to put a Christian thing around whatever you're experiencing? It sounds like Christian Buddhism or something to me, just like your non-judgment, your love. That's great. Yeah. And I'm glad you found the lens of Christianity for it. But for me personally, to go backwards to my, you know, I think Gungor has that great illustration in that book, about Michael Gungor, about trees and, you know,
famous like, deconstructed, kind of progressive Christian guy.
And so I was like, okay, I have to, his book super challenged me to be like, I can't leave the tree that I knew so well, you know, and just go out and explore these Hindu ones or whatever it is without, like, I do understand this Christian tradition and I do understand it. So like,
you feel a pull.
Yeah.
Now, as I just watched that,
but getting inside that car again, dude, is just like a whole other process.
Yeah. Cause there's something, sounds like there's something inside of you
that
goes, well, it's always going to be a part of you for sure.
Mm.
But then it comes with probably a lot of trauma. Go back, listen to Matt's episode. Yep. It's definitely quite the journey. But before we go any further, man, I got a lot of judgments happening inside of me right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just like,
I thought you were sold already. I thought you were going to be sold straight away on this.
Well, I just got to get these off my chest.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was watching. I also know Chris a little bit. Not as well as you.
Yeah.
Great guy.
Mm-hmm.
Great guy. Friend of the show. Always a great guy if you're a friend of the show. Doesn't matter what you think. But as I hear him, I go, one, I love when someone's like, hey, this impacted me. Mm. I'm going to share it with you. But then it's pulling the trigger of like evangelism.
Right.
It's like,
I get that vibe from Chris.
Right. Well, it's like, I'm selling an idea, right?
Okay. Yeah.
Which I think is okay. I actually respect when someone goes, I believe in this and I want to share it with you.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there can be that Christian trigger of being like, this made my life better. You need it as well. Mm. And he does come from the personal, like, I've got a bit of freedom here. And the other thing I'm thinking is going, okay, it sounds to me like it's an idea that, he's coming from a different pathway.
Mm.
It's normally people in the Rob Bell way being like, how, if a God is so loving, who would say no?
Mm.
Right? If all things being equal, that's how they get there. Whereas he seems to be still very concerned about biblical accuracy.
Mm.
So it sounds like a very, almost a conservative pathway to universalism.
Potentially, yeah. Or just like an Adventist like slant on things. So the thing you would have to, like, the caveat with Adventism is in the sense that...
Give us a little rundown on the thinking of Adventism.
Adventism are annihilationists, so they didn't believe in this eternal burning hellfire. So if you really get into atheist literature, they'll really start pointing out the moral, the moral contradictions in the sense that you believe in this loving God, but you have this eternal burning hellfire thing that's a super, you know, seems opposite, you know, it seems like a moral contradiction, they would say, of the entire thesis of the Bible, of a loving God coming to save his children.
Yeah.
And if you don't agree with it,
yeah,
straight into the cooker forever, you know, even if it's just like the mild, you know. And so it's Adventism being annihilationist, meaning that there'll be a judgment, but you'll be cooked only for a little bit. You go into the barbecue just for slight amounts of time instead of forever, and then it's done. It's called the second death.
Because there's a way of thinking in this worldview that is very... I don't want to use the word scientific, but you know how a scientific theory sets up and goes, here is the rules of the universe. And if A leads to B, then C, it's like it has its own inherent logic.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be the thinking of going, well, the Bible says this, and this means this, and this leads to this, and this beast means that. The Adventist way of thinking seems to be very much like that.
Yeah. And I guess I don't fully know where Chris is. You'd have to ask Chris as to where he's at with Adventism as a whole.
True.
So I don't know if that same layer of thinking is still there because... Oh, whether it's Christadelphian, Mormon, whatever, that there's a lot of that same
internal logic.
They would say it's proof texting. So it's like people that have come up with doctrines that really didn't understand original Hebrew or Greek could quite quickly say, well, love means this here and wisdom means this here. So God is the love of the wisdom of the angel in Jeremiah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like they just like be like, wait a second.
They like drawing, it's like a map on the wall. It's the crime scene. They're like, well, this links to this.
I know, like, and I'd spent hours myself through
this
those Bible studies. Yes, hours upon hours of like going through these proof texts, crazy rabbit holes of the Bible, which until I actually learned Greek and I was like, well, you can't say that. Like, there's actually not the same word.
Or, level up.
But yeah, this has like, anyway, regardless, people do this a lot, and it's really hard for them to, or anyone really, to understand this book. And so anyway, I think the point is I was super challenged by it, and I just wanted to go out there and get the best book I could. If I was going to open that car again, turn the keys, back in, adjust the rear vision mirror, what I'm doing, Jesus, turning that on.
Jesus, take the wheel.
Yeah, I'm like, I have to be committed though to this idea. Okay, so I have to not just in a really arrogant, or you would say like a, I'd have to remove as much bias as I could and just go, let me assume that I'd missed it.
Okay.
Assume that I missed this whole thing, that this is the flat earth of Christianity.
And everyone's wrong.
Everyone's wrong. I missed it too.
Yep.
And the reasons I had my issues of theodicy of God and the sufferings of God, like in the sufferings we all go through, judgment, whatever it is, were wrong. And I actually just totally missed it. So that's what I went out on the search, read a book, and I'm ready to pitch it to you.
Okay. So you're going to pitch me a version of God that, well, if I accept this, or you accept this, like Chris said, will I be transformed like Chris? I'll be more free, more empathetic, maybe more open. I mean, great claims.
Mm-hmm.
I'm open. Let's go.
Yeah. Well, I guess even as a universalist, you don't, because like, you know,
it doesn't matter.
It doesn't really matter. Oh, like eventually you could just come around. Like, so we go to this little Ideas Digest hell. We're still podcasting there. We're like, oh, we did sort of screw up thing with the Christian God that we should have been like.
We'll work it out.
And we eventually worked it out, and we're like, oh, sorry, God.
Oh, well, in you come, mate. In you come. You got there in the end.
He's like, God, right. You heretic. Come on.
It was right there the whole time.
We're like, oh.
Whoops.
So I read this book, and it's a really interesting, massive amount of reviews. And I didn't want to get something that was just someone like, I left evangelicalism and I'm so bruised by the idea of hell, and this is how you should see God. Or, you know, I wanted to get something that was really scholarly. So
it sounds like you went into, you channeled Matt Potts 10 years ago that went, I want good biblical literature.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's my theological training kicked in.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
give me the Greek. Did it come in Greek?
So that all shall be saved. Heaven, hell, and universal salvation. We'll have a link in the show notes. Mm-hmm. David Bentley Hart. He is an Eastern Orthodox scholar of religion, a philosopher, writer, and cultural commentator. So I actually think, Conrad, you would love this book.
Really?
Just straight off the bat.
Okay.
Well, I did very well written, like really well written. Like this guy's, he has a series of essays, and we don't want to go, this is a highly technical topic, and I realize a lot of the people listening to the show are not going to give much stuff about the Greek and Hebrew.
Going to dumb it down for me, because old liberal Christian Conrad over here, like, God's love, the end. Next page.
I know, while I'm like deep down to like word studies of like light, love, and like, and beasts.
Yeah.
You're playing cards. Or you're like playing ping pong at your youth group. Like
We're all out at lunch having just a good chat.
And I've got my like Strong's Concordance and I'm just like highlighting my Bible.
I don't even
Bible.
Know what that is. You're already using Strong's Concordance. What is he? Anyway.
Whole other show we should go into with that. But
I'll
anyway.
Keep Matt in check.
So yeah, I won't go in through too many rabbit holes, but I want to give you a bit of a decent TLDR, because I do think anyone listening to the show, just pick it up and read it.
Okay.
Just as a cat, even if you think it's totally horseshit.
I was actually going to say, don't read it. Matt already did. Here we go.
Yeah. He had a lot of these like moral like things about hell, which I think were very well written, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, anyone I think of that's listening to this, there's not too many Christian fundamentalists left that would like actually make it to this point.
No, that's true. I mean, I do have a few friends of the show that are conservative Christians. Really,
okay.
Yeah. They engage every now and then, and I love hearing their perspective.
Yeah. Okay.
And so if that's you, stick to the end, golden emoji, send me a DM, I'll send it to you. You make it to the end.
So the TLDR is basically, there is really a huge moral, you would say, incongruity with the old idea of an eternal hell.
But if for God you, is love, like, how can he burn someone forever?
Yeah.
Doesn't seem very loving.
Yeah. So then you go, then he goes for deep dives into the Old Testament. And so as a young Adventist, I guess I knew a lot of this stuff anyway growing up, is that like the whole Hebrew version of like heaven, hell wasn't really established.
Because Adventists already were like, we don't believe in hell.
They're soul sleepers and annihilationists. So soul sleeper is
all these soul sleeper annihilationists.
Yeah. These are the two terms of
didn't believe in hell.
And soul sleep meaning you die, no soul goes anyway.
That's true.
That's a pretty important important point there, Conrad.
I'm finding flashbacks to like Bible studies with Matt.
And so, yeah, so that's basically that. And I think all of us would, I think if you disagree with that, if you think there is a moral case from hell, one, we should listen, like, you need to write into us.
Let us know. I would explore the moral case for hell.
The moral case. I just think most of the people listening would probably agree that it's pretty screwed up. And even if you did agree, I think even the most hardcore five-point Calvinist listening right now would go...
They always go, only God can judge.
Yes.
Only God. But that's... How that would it send totally... You to hell,
yeah.
But only God can judge.
Matt and Conrad are clearly not elected and totally depraved. So we, how would we, you know, we're just like sinful people casting judgment at God, and how should we judge?
That's right. Who are we?
God's word.
Worms.
But anyway, the interesting thing is like, this is the thing that I never understood until I actually got to theological school. I thought when the early church came together, there was this pure doctrine that was Seventh-day Adventist.
You wouldn't believe that.
Yeah, I did. I'm like, they're all Sabbath keepers and they're all soul sleepers, annihilationists, blah, blah, blah. And it's actually not the case. The actual distribution of ideas was quite diverse, very diverse from the get-go, from Sunday first to Sabbath keeping to different ideas on heaven and hell. But the early church leaders were actually very much, if not at least sympathizing with the point of view, actually were universal. Like a lot of the core early guys were universalist leanings.
That's a heretical claim. Ding, ding. I'm listing heretical claims.
If you want to fact check me, you're going to have to read this book. Because we'll just go through too many rabbit holes of that claim.
I'll take your word for it.
And this is the thing, right? It's not until we get... I think it's Eusebius in the 4th century. He's trying to bring all of this together. And there's still so many arguments about what is the New Testament? What is this Apocalypse of Peter book where Peter goes to hell? And who wrote that? They're just like, who's it?
So you got all these different
extra
pre-biblical texts.
Yeah, this is before the canonization
trying to cram it together.
And it's actually really not a coherent thought. And so...
So there was no agreement on Christianity as we're... told today is what you're saying.
So the conspiracy really is.
Okay, take me to the conspiracy.
Let's study some incentive structures.
Okay.
So this guy wrote in 1934 this book. It's called Orthodoxy and Heresy in the Earliest Christianity. You should pick it up, have a look at it as well. It was the Roman church. We're not talking Roman Catholicism. We're talking like Rome, you know, the letter to the Romans.
The empire.
Yeah. No, just like where the church was located.
Right.
They were the ones that had a bit of cash, bit of influence, and they had a fair bit of sway politically. They started pushing levers as to what they thought was orthodox and what they thought wasn't.
You're telling me money changes politics.
Yeah, incentive structures.
Weird.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, so this is how by the time we have, like, you'd say like the 5-point Calvinist or 4.5-point Calvinist that's listening is just like, what about Augustine? He was clearly into believing in hell. Yes, but he also hated Greek. Like he openly hated Greek. You can fact check me on this, his native language. But he was one of the first guys that really started taking hold of this. And then eventually, it seems from the 4th, the 5th century, this thing really had caught bought, like it became mainstream and then went on from that. But the big question, the big conspiracy, Conrad, is what happened between AD 100 and 300. And in that period, let no one tell you that this was it, that they were all like predestinationists or they're all Adventists or they're all anything. It was just this movement that was crazy, had so many crazy ideas, different cultures all smashing together, people writing Gnostic texts, people writing stories of going to hell with Jesus, well, the apocalypse, like so much craziness. Like, it was like Matt Potts going from church to church and taking on different ideas at a time. And you would say it was probably more like YouTube today of like you Google something and you get about 50 different responses.
So we're painted this picture of Christianity. Mm-hmm. As being, and this is the conservative Christian claim.
Yes.
That it has always been this set of beliefs and there's slight variations, but the early church always believed these things.
And then we've missed it. We've swayed from the early
church.
And
you're saying that there was not only one other alternative, but heaps of other alternatives. You got all these people on Truth Social.
Yeah.
You know, the underground Trump platform being like, nah, God's like this and he's a universalist and there's lots of differing opinions.
But you would say that universalism was well accepted.
Right.
It wasn't just fringe.
Right.
So that was the weird thing, right? When Rob Bell came out with this heretical idea, people were like, oh, it's heresy, heresy, heresy. We got to think the Protestant, like the church movements that led before him that created this like solid, you know, irrefutable doctrine of the Bible was not there in that early church. It wasn't as simple as that.
So they tried to create consensus.
Yes.
And you're saying the incentive structures of
certain
Rome.
Yeah, and certain other, like, it's very complicated. No one really, to be honest, understands it. Like, we're using scattered data points, but the scattered data points that we do have means that it's a little bit crazy. It's a little bit over the shop. We have all this. And it wasn't really, I think, they started until the 20th century. Everyone just accepted that this canonization was simple. And then they discovered all these other manuscripts and they're like, what the heck is this?
Hide them.
Yeah. They're just like,
call them Gnostic. Yeah, ditch them.
Yeah. Ditch those. These things.
Because Gnostic's another dirty word.
Yeah.
But very prevalent
in the early
church. If you read an ancient text that has not been canonized, then you get the dirty word of Gnostic. And honestly, Liberal Conrad, it never really impacted me. They'd say, that's a Gnostic belief. I'm like, cool. Mm. Like, oh no. But that's a bad word as well, Gnostic. That's heretical.
So then if you start scrambling your head a bit and just be like, oh, wait a second. Like, didn't Jesus talk heaps about judgment and hell and weeping and gnashing your teeth? And I think this is when they'll just start, you can just hear the cry. You'll just start hearing the cry of like either someone that's really hardcore into this judgment stuff or in hardcore hell believer. It's like Jesus spoke about, this is one of the biggest topics he spoke about. You can't just ignore this. Oh my God, you're throwing out all this tradition. You mean Calvin got it wrong. You mean Luther got it wrong. These guys were giants in the faith. And like X, Y, Z person has totally missed this. And I'm saying,
yes.
I'm saying, well, like Luther was a bit of a psycho. So was Calvin. Like these aren't guys you're going to be like, I want to like mimic your life.
Right. See, all the historical knowledge, but I've heard the names. I've heard the names.
And Matt's like, are you Calvin, even a Christian? Yeah, I mean, Calvin Klein. So anyway, so then you zoom back and you go, what the hell did even Jesus believe?
Good question.
So that's when you start zooming. And if you want to pick up a book, again, too much for the show. Where is it here? It's Heaven and Hell, History of the Afterlife by Bart Ehrman. And he is a very controversial guy. He's actually an agnostic scholar, but he's come out with a new book on this because he's just like...
What's it called?
We'll leave in the show notes. Heaven and Hell, a History of the Afterlife. Mm. It's very good. He's got heaps of lectures on YouTube.
But he's an atheist.
Agnostic, yeah.
Agnostic,
He was like a hardcore believer and then he's left. Yeah, we should get him on the show if we can. He's a really amazing, amazing scholar. Controversial, and I'm not saying everything he says is gospel, but... He's done some really deep work into who was Jesus, like, because like a lot of these gospels written after that. And without going into way too much detail, because we're going to come back around into why I think this is all really important and some really strong reasons why I think this is really important that we think this through. We at least have some grace, or anyone that's been really traumatized by hell before, or judgment, or impending judgment and impending, you need to take action now. So that could be, some of my friends were petrified of, say, the rapture.
Mm.
They just were just wandering around just thinking, I'm going to be here, I'm going to be taken.
Early friend of the show, Thomas, who was on early days of Ideas Digest, he shared his experience of literally having panic attacks, being told about hell, his skin melting off, like really great episode from a while back if you get on that.
Friend that's a Southern Baptist, she's a friend of the show as well. She's explained they had like full-on like plays. And so you go through, like, I think this is a great idea for evangelism, so they'd put on a play where they reenact hell for the community.
Cool.
Yeah. So it's like the Road to Bethlehem.
Or a horror house.
But it's like the horror version of that. You're just like, okay, come in and see why you need to repent and be saved. Oh, wow. Like such a strange angle, right? But this thing is deep within our psyche and I think there's some really good explanations for that. But basically, what Jesus spoke about a judgment, because like there's some controversial texts in there about, say, for example, some of you will not taste death until you see the kingdom of heaven, blah, blah, blah. Paul spoke about his impending second coming. Paul thought that the kingdom was coming. So what was this understanding of kingdom? What was this understanding of judgment that was happening? And what did the Pharisees believe in that day? And they didn't have some set thing of like, you know, like this is hell, this is heaven, this is where the soul goes. It was not established like that. They were actually probably closer to a soul sleep understanding of the gospel. Had the Sadducees had their own ideas. I'm really trying to accelerate through this so it doesn't get like too technical. But the thing that you should look back on with Jesus is in the sense that I don't think, like, it was the Greek influence later within the church that I think that we had this real Platonic view of this soul becoming like this immortal soul.
There was an infusion of another culture,
yes,
into these people and their beliefs that inserted a hell, that inserted, I guess, the Greek ideas, because Greek, man, I know nothing about history, but the Greek gods, and they have like their Greek myths. And so maybe some of that.
So Dante's Inferno was one of those things that was very popular at the time. And so if you do some exegetical research or the study of these hell it's like scholars are working hard to try and correlate what, you know, because we read hell in our Bible now, but that's not what hell is to the Greek or the Hebrew, which could mean a variety of different things, which I don't think we should go. That's beyond the scope of the show to do a deep dive into that. But I do think we just need to take the TLDR of this is that I think you should read some of those books. You should go back and study some of those things. And this is me going back, like all back in time and going, Matt, maybe I misinterpreted Jesus, because he was Matt Potts, just anxiety, Friday night late, and I've got my Strong's Concordance out. I'm reading about the end times here and I'm studying Daniel and Revelation. I'm like, there's going to be this judgment on this lake of fire. Have you heard about the lake of fire? Conrad.
Maybe.
Where was your education? Seriously. I really doubt that you, when you, anyway.
Hearing you talk about all this stuff, I'm like, was probably having a good time.
I'm jealous, actually. This is my secret jealousy kicking in. So anyway, here's me reading all of this. And like this, this thing is so anxiety inducing. If you really just, I guess the right headspace, you put yourself in there. A lot of people listening, I know, would have been very traumatized by this language. Impending, like you just not having the goods, you know, you're just like not being good enough, like you're not just, you know, the separated sheep and the goats, you're out.
Yeah, you got to make sure you're right with God so you can go to heaven.
And it's so hard, right? You're trying to be this, you're trying to follow this doctrine. And so you either go into what Chris is talking about, to this state of mind where you're constantly afraid or you're judging. It sort of gives you that sense of safety of like, I have the truth and you're wrong.
Yes. You have the truth, I can't admit that because then I'm going to hell.
Exactly.
So I'm really going to double down in these incentive structures. I'd rather judge you for being wrong than ever entertain the possibility that I'm going to hell.
Yes. So overall, I think, and we could go for hours upon hours upon hours upon hours on the textual criticism of all this.
You could go for hours.
Yeah. I'm like, what I think people should do is just look back and just say, probably what you were taught at Sunday school or Sabbath school, whatever your variation was probably inherited from a tradition that had a lot of bias involved. And if you were to have an honest look back at Jesus' teachings, there's a lot of new research out there and it's maybe not what you thought it was. Even from an Orthodox Christian perspective, say for example, this is right. Say for example, universalism is right. Right now, I tell you it is. I think it's consistent, blah, 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 blah. Would you become a Christian universalist, or you sort of already are? I don't know. Actually, hard to tell with you sometimes.
Slippery eel, mate. Slippery eel. You just can't pin me down. Well, it's interesting because the roadmap you've drawn is the Matt Potts roadmap, which it's like, and this is, I think, for friends of the show listening, it's an interesting insight and understanding as I watch how you would arrive at a similar point to me, which it sounds like what I'm getting, and correct me where I go, but it sounds like you're saying, universalism is like, it really doesn't matter what you believe. And guess what? For those of you that really are trying to use this ancient text to work out who God is and how you can be on the right side of this judgment, because on some level you've got to get it right. There's that pressure. Mm. So the tendency is to default back to that text that you were taught was the be all and end all. You're kind of saying there's a pathway in that. And the early church also was very diverse and probably believed something similar. Mm-hmm. So you could arrive there, or you could just shortcut it like Conrad and go, God's love.
Mm-hmm.
Who would say no?
Yeah. But I think so many people could be listening to the show that have rejected the idea of God because of this doctrine.
Yes. So I think to the next point then, that's true and understandable, and then people like Chris might say, yeah, great. That's actually not who God is.
Mm-hmm.
But once you reject God or that concept of God, become an atheist and agnostic and a who cares, I suppose, who is this pathway for? Who is this? this idea of universalism, if you've already dismissed God, does this matter to someone who's dismissed God entirely?
Maybe not. And I think this is why universalism was so controversial, is because from a centralized religious control perspective, it lacks stickiness. It lacks control to it. If you populate, say your congregation is all universalists. So you get up there and you preach to them about this, you would say, narrow road and this really impending judgment. It's really just, I've thought a lot through this, and I have a theory as to why I just don't think the early church liked it. I just think it didn't stick very well. It's not something you can lead a movement, or particularly like the Roman Catholic Church through the Dark Ages. You know what they did with some of this stuff. They made a lot of cash through ex-relative out of purgatory right now, a bit of coin,
yeah,
and you're out. So it was a very, very, very powerful psychological warfare, I'd say, on their population that couldn't read the original text. They didn't understand the different viewpoints. They expected anything's coming out from these amazing scholars. And I'm not trying to say Luther and Calvin, obviously very intelligent guys, smart guys, but they also were part of a bias that they were inheriting, right? And so it's just interesting when you take that step back and go, oh, wait a second. This, I could maybe as a universalist not be so triggered by my, text that that real missionary text that I received from someone, or maybe someone invites me to church, or there's like an Easter program. I don't have to be so traumatized by the whole thing.
You're open to another pathway.
Yeah, you can go back into those environments if you've left, and there's really Jesus is the thing you understand. Like, you haven't grown up Hindu, you don't understand the Vedic texts and the Buddhist texts, and you wouldn't have a clue what Zoroastrianism or whatever it is. It's like all these different religions out there. This is the thing that you understand. Maybe this is a pathway back to God. Maybe it is something where you just went like, I can't stomach this thing. Because you may have been the child like Matt Potts. And this is I just want to put yourself in this situation. You never experienced this, so I have to paint it for you.
Yes.
Imagine you just this, that Matt Potts, he's that geeky guy that is studying biblical prophecy. He's like got all these notes on his side. He believes in the King James Version, and he's just like, he's trying to plot all this stuff together.
Because you're trying to work out who God is and how to be right.
Yes. Because I'm actually shit scared of about an end times thing that's impending. And I'm trying to work out, is this correct?
Yep.
And I'm putting all the proof texts together with no Greek and Hebrew.
Because Jesus is coming back soon. So you've got to sort this out.
There's an urgency, right? There's an urgency. Yeah. There's a scarcity. That I have to get things right in a small amount of time. So this is what I think happens. And to give you an example, I was like, Conrad was out playing ping pong.
Why do you think I'm playing ping pong? I was like a ping pong. I was definitely at the beach.
You're either at the beach drumming and your sermons were as I said to you last night, quips. Jokes and quips.
Quips.
God is love. It's like, see
Jesus,
your kids.
Jesus was the Bible story. It's like, Moses, he was like the cool guy down the road.
Yeah, they're just like, let's play Back to the Future on TV. And Jesus sort of like Marty. And he went back in time. And that's your level of biblical education.
Well, I don't, I'll absorb it at the moment as you keep going, but come on.
So, but I need to take you into my world and potentially thousands, I would say millions upon millions of Christians would have been in a similar environment as this. And there's a guy called Paul Washer who really believes in hell. And he would say we're heretics, obviously.
Yeah.
And Paul Washer's a guy that I just think, I found this YouTube video of him. And it's what you're about to hear is high level trigger fest, particularly if you're someone like me that have been to these events. Because here's Matt Potts trying to put all this together, and then some authority figure comes, sends a text message like, let's go to a youth meeting or something. Mm-hmm. And you're just vulnerable, you're trying to work all this stuff out. So you go to one of these meetings, and all of a sudden you're surrounded by hundreds, maybe thousands of other young people. They're on this same journey of what the fuck is this shit? But I need to get myself right because I think there might be an end times.
God's coming back soon.
Yeah. And so you're packed into a room, and the music's playing. There's wow, everyone's spiritual here. And then a guy like Paul Washer gets up in front of 5,000 young people and says this.
I'm not troubled in my heart about your self-esteem. I'm not troubled in my heart about whether or not you feel good about yourself, whether or not life is turning out like you want it to turn out, or whether or not your checkbook is balanced. There's only one thing that gave me a sleepless night. There's only one thing that troubled me all throughout the morning, and that is this. Within 100 years, a great majority of people in this building will possibly be in hell.
What's the point of being there?
And many who even profess Jesus Christ as Lord will spend an eternity in hell.
Liberal Conrad gives
you
up
say,
at this point.
Pastor, yeah, how can out. You say such
you're
a thing?
Through the fade,
I can say
the
such
gram.
A thing because yeah. I don't do my Christian work in America. I spend most of my time preaching in South America, in Africa, and Eastern Europe.
Because they're the heretics.
And I want you to know that when you take a look at American Christianity, it is based more upon a godless culture than it is upon the Word of God. And so many people are deceived. And so many youth are deceived. And so many adults are deceived into believing that because they prayed a prayer one time in their life, they're going to heaven.
Okay.
And then when they look around at others who profess to know Christ and see those people also just as worldly as the world.
There's social proof in the room.
Yeah.
You're like,
and they compare themselves by themselves. Nothing troubles their heart. They think, well, I'm the same as most in my youth group.
True.
I watch things I shouldn't watch on television and laugh about the very things that God hates. I wear clothing that is sensual. I talk like the world. I walk like the world. I love the music of the world. I love so much that's in the world. But bless God, I am a Christian.
Yeah,
why am
dude.
I a Christian? I don't look any different than most of the other people in my church.
So this is what you're like. You're sitting in this event, and all of a sudden this authority figure is talking to you about this. I've been in these meetings, Conrad.
I have not.
A growing in holiness and a desire not to be like Britney Spears, not to be like
don't be
world,
like her. Well, I mean,
she went crazy.
He called that one.
American Christians, but to be like Jesus Christ.
Look at this. He's like,
I don't know why you're clapping. I'm talking about you.
This is not Hillsong. I'm talking about you.
I didn't come here to get amen.
I didn't come here to get amen.
I didn't come here to be applauded. I'm talking about you.
What a humble. You're going to hell.
People
yeah, you idiot. Clapping.
Exactly.
So I'd love to follow you into Romania. I'd love to follow you into the Ukraine.
This.
I'd love to preach.
Do you have
you
what it takes?
Planted churches in Peru in the jungle, and I tell them.
And
no,
you'd ask yourself the question.
They said, yes, I would. I said, no, you wouldn't. Why? Because you'd be excommunicated from the church down there.
Why?
What?
He's a bit of a prophet, this guy.
We need to see. I'm not trying to be hard for the sake of being hard. Do you realize how much love it takes to stand before 5,000 people and tell them
oh, this
that
is
American
love.
Christianity is
I believe
almost
it.
Totally wrong?
See, so okay, so I just wanted you to feel the weight.
Okay, hang on. I've got to like, because I'm in this mode of like, Liberal Conrad.
And you're bailing.
I'm just flipping the birds and yeah. I'm like, mate, this guy has no idea. God mm-hmm. is love, peace. I'm out. Like, but I'm trying to go younger Conrad, more mm-hmm, impressionable
exactly.
Conrad. And it is funny for me to look at now being like, holy shit, this guy is like, actually, you know who he reminds me of? Mm-hmm. That awesome series, we've mentioned it before, The Rise and Fall of Mars Hill.
Yeah, yeah.
This is,
yeah.
What's his name?
Mark Driscoll.
This is Mark Driscoll before his time.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got a friend of the show that's going to come on soon who's talking about leadership in churches and
yeah.
toxic leadership. So anyway, bit of a note there. But
sure.
let me try and get into that mode of like, now it's this double questioning that I'd be feeling. I'd be thinking, no, I think I've got the right doctrine. I think I'm reading the right thing. I do try and pray every day. And then he looks at me and says, no, idiot clapping. Yeah, you.
Yeah.
You're not going to be saved because you won't go to Africa. I'm like, yeah, I probably won't. It's pretty far.
Exactly.
And you won't build a church over there.
Exactly.
Oh, but okay, maybe I can. No, you won't. Oh, no, I can't. And so now I'm going to leave that just feeling like an absolute, like Christianity has a way of subconsciously making you feel like shit.
Yeah.
This guy just gets your face
yeah.
and just shoves it in the shit.
Rubs that in.
And says, you're not even going to make it.
Yeah. There's many of you in this room that won't even make it.
Most, I think he said.
I've been in those meetings where this charismatic guy that has a whole Bible memorized will say, you know, you cannot enter the kingdom of heaven alone, meaning you must bring someone with you.
Oh.
Yeah.
Now that adds a whole new level to evangelism.
Now, so, you know, he has a crazy message and there's something funny in here and just we may not need to include this bit.
There's some of you who look around and you think, well, I'm saved. I mean, look, I look like everybody else in my youth group. What makes you think your youth
group
is saved?
He doesn't. He's nerd shirt. Yeah, yeah. Chinos.
Well, I'm like my parents, or I'm like the adults in my church, or the deacon, or the pastor. What does that matter? You won't be judged by them on the day of his coming. My question for you, beloved, my question for you, little child, I mean, you could be my children. Yeah. And I pray someday when my little boy grows that there'll be a preacher who'll stand before him and say, enough of this! Let's get down. What does the Word of God say? How does your life stand in front of that blazing fire, which is the holiness of God, on that final day, beloved, precious little girl, beloved, precious young man, on that final day, will your confession hold true? Are you saved?
Are you saved?
Oh, well, now I don't bloody know.
Well, I think
exactly. This is what I want you to get in the mindset.
Seems right,
and he's also saying, what does the Bible say? I don't know, man. Tell me.
I feel in my heart of my hearts that I'm saved. Well, let me ask you a question. Did you ever read that the heart is deceitfully wicked? Who can know it?
You can't. You can't even trust it.
Shouldn't you go to the testimony of Scripture? Well, I know I'm saved because my mom, my dad, my pastor, everybody else told me I was saved.
Yep. Why not?
Well, I'm telling you this. What does the Word of God tell you?
I don't know. Tell me.
Tell me, Paul.
We talk so much about being radical Christians.
This is radical. I give him that.
Yeah. Christians. I actually think this guy's on point.
Jump at concerts. Radical Christians are not people who wear Christian t-shirts.
Oh, you would hate this.
This is
you. I see what you're doing here.
Yes, I want you to feel the judgment.
My servant
radical
merch.
Christians are those who reverence and honor their parents, even when they feel like their parents are wrong. Radical Christians are those who do not. Now listen to me, this is going to make you mad. And I'm talking to boys and girls. Radical Christians are those who do not dress sensually in order to show off.
That was you, Conrad. Now I'm questioning. Look at this. How many buttons? I'm in Bali. I'm like, oh, I got to be a bit coastal.
Okay.
How did he know?
Is this central? Too central.
Damn.
The central clothes bit I thought was awesome.
It's funny how that's what he goes to. Mm. He goes, don't jump at concerts. He's a bit all over the place.
Yeah,
he's
like,
don't jump at concerts. Obey your parents. And don't wear sensual clothes.
And I'm talking to boys and girls. And girls here.
Girls. Tom, that's totally fine. Susan, I can see shape.
Yep. So this is the thing. This is when you hear from part of Chris's story. This is some of the material we were engaging. And so you can now understand when Chris has discovered this lack of judgment because I have a theory. Like, I've thought a lot about this as to why this messaging is so effective. Like, why was Driscoll so effective?
Yeah,
like,
he was mega effective.
It's very, very effective messaging. And this is not since I've sort of left this entire thing and obviously deconstructed and studied a lot of marketing, human psychology. I actually think there's a psychological phenomenon going on here, which is a reason why universalism didn't stick, and it's scarcity.
Okay.
So when Jesus was announcing this incoming kingdom, you don't have 100 years or like maybe eternity as a universalist to work it out.
Liberal Conrad would say, Jesus actually said the kingdom is here.
Yeah.
Already.
Yeah, right. So, but they had this impending thing of like judgment was coming. There was prophecies about the fall of Jerusalem, right? Like Jesus spoke about that. There was an incoming judgment and it was here. And there was this urgency. It's like, these guys, these disciples were out there fishing. It was now to follow Jesus, right?
Yeah.
And it's like when you're preaching a message like this, and I've done variations of this, it's an extremely effective messaging because it's like, one, I'm second guessing everything I've been told and this is a new authority figure. Yeah. Two, I could get this wrong. And if I get this wrong, I'm going to hell.
High stakes.
Very high stakes that you have to figure out there in the meeting. He's about to call for a decision.
Oh, good. That is good marketing.
Yes, yeah. You've got to call for a decision. Right. So they're time compressing for you. So they've done studies on this, right? They've had just two. I think it was a 1975 study of two jars were placed, and they told people to value which was the more valuable cookie. Same cookie, same jars. One had half amount of cookies. One had the full amount of cookies. Everyone valued the half jar. just a psychological phenomenon. Yeah, because it's less, right? Yeah. Whenever there's something scarcity in the market, whenever there's limited editions, whenever there's like limited time sales, it's always about promoting human action. It's sticky for human psyche.
And it creates a lot of devotion because you're looking at the next guy going, well, if it's limited, it's going to be me and I'm going to be more devoted. Yes. And how do I be devoted? Because I guess when I was making fun of his vague language there, read what the Bible says, everyone bloody is, mate. Like that's why it's so confusing. But then everyone goes, yeah, read what the Bible says. But then they don't, this is a fast conversation.
Yes.
Oh, tell me what it says. Oh, that's right. Yes, that's what it is. And I'm going to just dedicate myself to this leader. And that's how these leaders, like Mark Driscoll, become these authoritarian figures because of that.
Yes. Well, you've also got Jesus saying some pretty radical things at times that they latch onto and say. And then, and I guess in a seeker-sensitive culture, it's not really cool to get up and say that. But a lot of what he says is biblical. The message is biblical. I know it doesn't sit well with you liberal con, right?
Like, it depends because
he's not making stuff up. If you listen to the entire thing, it's a bit unfair to put him, if you're a Paul Washer fan. We'll link it in the show notes. You can be your own judgment of what you think of it. But I'm just saying, regardless if you agree or disagree with what he's saying, it's a very, very effective messaging. And I'm saying this hell thing and this imminent judgment thing, how like denominations place themselves as the centerpiece of an impending second coming or the impending prophecy is very sticky for humans, extremely sticky for humans. So you can, I can't pronounce his last name. It's Daniel, it's a Kahneman. He is an amazing guy on bias and stuff like that. Like if you, read Predictably Irrational, read his books, incredible guy. It's basically saying that research has proven, it's called loss aversion therapy. Research has shown that, that the pain of losing something is psychologically almost about as twice as powerful as the pleasure of gaining the same thing.
Hmm.
The pain of losing it is about double, like almost twice, he says, and this is through studies, isn't just pseudoscience, is, you know, as the pleasure of gaining the same thing.
So the scenario is?
We're loss aversion because it's an evolutionary psychological advantage.
You go, hey, I'll flip a coin. And you can win $5.
Yes.
And you go, oh, okay, that would be nice. They go, but if I flip a coin, you lose, you're going to lose $5.
Yeah.
You're going to be more averse to losing the $5 you already have.
Yes.
Than if you're going to get maybe the same amount or more.
So the point I'm trying, a big throw the dart at the dartboard, send us in your messaging. What do you think? Is it possible? Is it just that hell and everything stuck better? It was a better story. If that's the case, is that the reason why universalism, just in an evolutionary sense of that's ideas against ideas, it just lost out?
That's pretty much exactly what I was going to say. It's when you listen to someone like Yuval Harari, who's an atheist but writes about the evolution of humans.
Yes.
He pays religion the respect I think it's due, because if it exists now, socially it did something. So that's an interesting theory to think about what you just said. It's just, this is a more powerful way of bringing people together, putting a leader to the top, mobilizing action. Money. He's going to mobilize people to go to those countries and spread this ideology.
Yes.
Whereas the universalist is going to be like, they'll get there.
Yeah.
They'll be right. God's love.
I just actually don't think universalism scales well as an idea or as an institution.
Or, yeah, I guess because it just fundamentally says, it's fine. We don't need the institution. God's got it. Which in a weird way, friends of the show listening could be thinking, God's got it. Well, that's a high faith in God.
Yeah.
In the inverse, it sounds like there's that narrow road and it's so hard to like work out what this God wants. Yeah. Whereas there's the other picture of God, the liberal Conrad, that defaults to, it's like, well, isn't there greater faith if you're just like, well, actually, God's not depending on me because God is God.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you can get there with internal logic.
Yeah.
It's an interesting pathway to get there through. Some people might need the historical church documents to prove that the Bible did this and I'm not a heretic and I'm not going against these traditions, because I suppose when you grow up in that tradition, I guess it's a traumatic thing to be dabbling with potentially being wrong forever.
Yes. I guess the TLDR for me, after listening to Chris, and Chris has got a great story, you should listen, become a Plus member, you will listen to that full interview. And I guess for me, I think it's great. I actually, after like putting this on, I'm like, I feel like I can explore a lot of my Christian heritage and all this weird stuff that I was blowing off the cobwebs. I felt as I was prepping for this episode and going through these like different words, you know, like exegetical studies and like Gehenna and whatever. And what
this guy really just went back to those, hitting those textbooks.
And then I was just like, yeah, I wasn't as triggered.
Well,
and that's cool.
What's interesting, as I watched this guy,
I wanted to get you a ball washer, and this is like, I knew.
I'd never seen him in my life.
I know, and I just was like, Conrad has not experienced the trauma that I've experienced.
I haven't.
I'm like, damn quips, damn quips, ping pong.
Cool sermons.
Like, hey. And your central clothes.
Oh, yes. All those like super low cut V-neck tees on the band at Hillsong.
Yeah.
I didn't really go to Hillsong, but I went every now and then because I could, because hey, God's got it, whatever. But...
It's triggered. So triggered. All right, so we've obviously just blown open Pandora's box of like church history and just like trauma.
You're all wrong.
I've thrown in some Paul Washer.
But it doesn't matter.
And I think a lot of people listening to this will be like, I didn't need to listen to Paul Washer like and take me back to those times, yes. Matt, which your own variation could have been the rapture or the end of times or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And so we would love to hear from you,
yes.
Because I believe there'd be so many people in our audience that have been in these meetings,
yes,
unlike you, and have had intense trauma from it.
Yeah.
And I think these are possibly part of the reason why they left.
Yeah, big time.
And so it'd be very interesting to say, are you open to universalism? If universalism was the only way for you to go back and walk into a church again, would you?
You wouldn't. That's fine too.
That's fine. Yeah, it could be
the inverse to this.
You don't have. Yeah, it's a universalist. You don't even go to church, right? It doesn't really scale well. Like
membership's super low, Matt. This idea sucks.
Yeah.
Hey, we're not universalists here.
Like linking back through.
Yeah,
that's why it could be the flat Earth of Christianity, in the sense we've all missed it because it just didn't stick well. But it is the truth.
But it's the truth. We just didn't scale it. On the inverse, I want to say, if you are someone who is listening to Paul Washer being a bit offended, Matt and I having a bit of a chuckle and a giggle at it, I actually genuinely would like to understand this worldview a bit more. Mm. And if you know anyone who would like to explain to us why actually we are in danger of hell's fire and heretics, and could defend an idea like this, very open to it, would love to explore that idea as well. So send
it's been
those
a long
through.
Time since someone's called me out as like a, you know,
bad guy,
habitual masturbator.
That's it. Yeah, you give that context.
Yeah, context from like, go back, listen to the old podcast and you'll hear it. So I would love to be
challenged. Matt, deep down, Matt is just waiting for a friend of the show to sit Matt
you
down.
You wake up.
And say, Matthew, you're leading people astray. You're wrong here, and here. And Matt would be like, scarcity, I'm in. What do I buy?
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm like, I'd be like, you can add a countdown timer. You can add like, you know, yes. Do like booking.com does and like 57 people looking at the same room.
Yeah. One room left. Oh.
I can actually make these guys more successful now.
Yes.
What am I thinking?
Don't. Well,
land the plane. I need to.
Yes. Well, if you would like to hear what I think about this, you've gotten a little bit as we've gone through. Go to ideasdigest.org, sign up, become a super friend of the show. Your support actually means so many things. We're giving hand praying signals to the camera here because it's just mainly an auditory thing. But ideasdigest.org, you get bonus material. You hear what I'm about to tell you, Matt, what I think. And Matt, I think I want to know how much you're buying, whether you're on the board with this universalism thing or not.
Plus Chris's full interview, which is really interesting. Impacted his marriage and everything. That's really cool stuff. Yep.
And if you can, head to Apple Podcasts, leave us a review. 5 stars is the preferred one. But if it's one, honesty is the best policy. So we'll take
it. We're going to get so many 1 stars from Paul Washer fans. Because to be fair to Paul Washer, he's at least, I don't think he's like...
Big following,
but also not like a prosperity dude. Like he's not like Driscoll that sort of put his book on the bestseller list and made like a few hundred grand a year.
He like bought himself to the top of the bestseller list.
So like Paul Washer's the legit.
He got there.
If Paul Washer stared at me and called me a heretic, I'd be like...
Is he still alive?
Yes, yeah.
Man, if we could get him on the show.
This would be good.
Yeah. Oh, that would be great. So thanks everyone for tuning in to Ideas Digest. Super friends. Stick around.
So Conrad, so I'm actually very curious now. Mm-hmm. Full honesty. Tell us it all. What do you think?
Mm-hmm. Okay.